A short time later, the wagon train got underway again. The kid, Harwood, and Farnham rode out together, splitting up when they were about a quarter mile ahead of the wagons. Harwood angled off to the south, Farnham veered north, and the kid continued straight ahead. The hot sun beating down made him grateful for the shade cast by the broad-brimmed hat. He had to stop more often during the afternoon and pour water from his canteen into his hat so the dun could drink. It was during one of those pauses, the kid heard something that made him lift his head and squint into the distance to the west. The sounds that drifted to his ears through the hot, still air were unmistakable. The kid stood stiffly, listening as the battle continued. It was hard to tell how far away the shooting was. The kid's hunch was that the fight was at least a couple of miles west of his position. He debated for a moment whether he should gallop ahead and try to lend a hand, or carry the warning of possible trouble back to the wagon train. That decision was taken out of his hands as he could hear that the battle was over. For one side or the other, that had to be bad news. The kid wheeled his horse and hurried toward the wagons. He saw Harwood and Farnham coming in too, and figured they had also heard the shots. Horace Dunlap saw the three scouts and rode out to meet them a couple of hundred yards from the wagons, which had come to a halt, no doubt at his order.
What is it, fellas? Trouble?
For somebody. I heard a lot of shooting up ahead.
I heard it too.
The kid nodded to indicate that he had as well.
Is it still going on?
No, it stopped.
You reckon the Apaches jumped that cavalry patrol?
Those troopers have had more than half a day to get ahead of us. As fast as they were moving when they left, they ought to be farther ahead of us than it sounded like those shots were.
Harwood looked over at the kid and Farnham, both of whom nodded in agreement with that opinion.
So the ruckus happened somewhere between us and them soldier boys.
That's the way it seems to be.
We'll ride ahead and take a look-see, just the four of us. The wagons will stay here. I'll tell the folks to get ready for trouble.
You ought to stay here too, Horace. You're the wagon master. We can't afford to have anything happen to you.
I'm going, blasted! I never hid from trouble in my life, and I ain't fixing to start now!
You wouldn't be hiding from trouble. You'd be doing the smart thing. These people are depending on your leadership to get them through.
What kind of a leader sends his men where he won't go his own self? Wait here. I'll be back in a minute.
Well, do we wait for him?
If we don't, we'll just have him breathing down our necks in a few minutes. I've known Horace for quite a while. Once he makes up his mind, there's no changing it.
I've known him for even longer. What it amounts to is that he's as stubborn as an old mule. Might as well wait for him, because he's coming along anyway.
A couple of minutes later, Dunlap galloped back out to join them. The kid looked past him at the wagons and saw that all the outriders had been pulled in to help defend the immigrants if need be.
Let's go!
The shots had come from due west. The four men rode in that direction. They didn't push their horses. If they encountered trouble, they might need to make a run for it, so they wanted their animals to be as fresh as possible. Anyway, the shooting was over. There was no real hurry. Suddenly, Dunlap leaned forward in the saddle.
Is that smoke I see up yonder?
It was. The kid had spotted the dark, thin ribbon of smoke curling into the air at the same time as the wagon master.
The hell's burning?
I don't know, but I intend to find out. Come on!
Horace, wait a minute! There's not much smoke. Fire can't be very big. It won't do anybody any good for us to go charging in there and get ourselves killed. We still need to be careful.
I reckon you're right. I sure don't like it.
Neither did any of the other men. All four wore grim expressions as they rode toward the rising smoke, which thickened slightly as the flames consumed more fuel. The smoke gave them something to steer by, and it wasn't long before they came in sight of what was burning. The fire was beginning to die down, leaving behind the charred husk of what appeared to be a huge wagon.
That's a freight wagon, one of them Conestogas.
The kid knew enough about the freight business to be aware that Conestoga wagons were longer, taller, and heavier than the light wagons used by immigrants. They were behemoths that were used only for hauling freight. The wagon hadn't gotten out there by itself. It had been pulled by a team of 8 draft horses, all of which lay slaughtered in their traces. Bloody, gaping wounds in the bodies of the unfortunate animals showed where large hunks of meat had been carved out and carried away.
Apaches. They love horse meat.
There must have been several teamsters with a wagon this size. Where are they?
You know the answer to that as well as I do, Milo. They must have been killed in the fight. The Apaches have taken them prisoner. Poor doomed bastards.
An air of depressed foreboding hung over the wagon train camp that night. Nobody talked about it, but most of the adults knew that somewhere out there in the darkness, the freighters who had been with that Conestoga were probably screaming their lives away as they were tortured to death by their Apache captors. The leadership of the wagon train held a subdued meeting next to Jessica's wagon while they were eating supper. Dunlap had asked the kid to join in, too. The kid and Farnham sat on a couple of kegs that had been taken from the wagon, while Jessica and Harwood sat together on the wagon tongue.
Who ships goods by freight wagon anymore? Everybody uses the railroad now.
Not everybody. There are still a few freight outfits hanging on. Their rates are lower than the railroads, and if you're shipping something that doesn't have to be anywhere in a particular hurry, like hammers and nails...
I'll bet that cavalry patrol caught up with that wagon just like they did with us, and that blasted Lieutenant Nicholson probably rode right on past it without even slowing down.
Wouldn't surprise me a bit. And now those poor fellas...
We have proof now that the Apaches are out here, over and above what Nicholson told us. I've seen plenty of their depredations over in Arizona.
Gang of white outlaws could have burned that wagon.
Well, they could have. But why would outlaws bother with a freight wagon? It wouldn't be carrying money or anything else they'd want. Besides, they would have just killed the teamsters and left the bodies there. Nah, this is Apache work. Setting the wagon on fire like that, carrying off prisoners. I've seen it all before.
Scott's right. Question is, what do we do about it?
There were tracks around what was left of that Conestoga. I reckon I could follow them.
And do what?
Might be able to help those prisoners.
They're already dead, or if they're not, they're wishing they were. There's nothing we can do for them, Milo. Our responsibility is here with this wagon train and these people. We better double the guards, Horse.
I agree. I'll be glad to stand a shift on watch.
I reckon we all will. I'll go around and talk to folks. Get volunteers first, and then figure out how many more men we need.
Women can stand guard too, Horace.
Oh, I don't reckon that'd be a good idea.
Why not? Not just any of the women, of course. But I can handle a rifle, and so can some of the others. And my eyesight and hearing are just fine, thank you. I don't know what else you need to stand guard.
Target shooting ain't the same thing as shooting at somebody.
I know that. I promise you. If I have one of those bloodthirsty Apaches in my sights, I won't hesitate to pull the trigger.
A short time later, the meeting broke up as Dunlap went to arrange the guard duties. The kid had volunteered to take one of the first shifts, so he didn't bother spreading his bedroll under one of the wagons just yet. He could do that later. He checked on the dun, then took his Winchester and moved out a short distance from the circle of wagons. He hunkered down in a clump of greasewood where he wouldn't be visible and attuned his senses to the night around him. If there was anything out of place, a sound, a flicker of movement, even a smell that shouldn't have been there, the kid would know it. The 3 hours he spent standing watch passed in slow, tedious boredom. After his shift, he slept fitfully under one of the wagons for a few hours and was up again at dawn with the others, sipping coffee and getting ready to move out. 2 more days would bring them to Rain Crow Valley, according to Dunlap. From there, the kid didn't know where he would go, but he would deal with that when the time came. He and Harwood and Farnham rode out again in front of the wagons. The landscape was empty. And except for the dust cloud from the wagons behind him, the kid might have been the only living thing within 1,000 miles. Around mid-morning, he saw buzzards circling ahead of him. For such ungainly birds on the ground, they wheeled through the air with a beauty and grace in striking contrast to their grim mission. They began to descend. A few minutes later, the kid spotted them surrounding a dark shape lying on the ground several hundred yards away. Knowing there was no hope, he heeled his horse into a run anyway. The buzzards took off again as the dun came pounding up. He reined in and looked down at the man staked to the ground. The Apaches had worked him over good with their knives, hacking and mutilating and peeling away much of his skin. His eyelids had been cut off so his lifeless eyes could only stare up into the blazing sun. The kid wondered if the man had still been alive when the Apaches left him there. It was a question that would never be answered. He was dead as hell now. The kid didn't have a shovel, so he waited for the wagons to get closer. The buzzards had been at the corpse already, and he didn't want them desecrating it anymore. When the wagons were within earshot, the kid drew his Colt and pointed it into the air. His signal brought Horace Dunlap over to his position. The wagon master grimaced and shook his head as he saw the body on the ground.
One of them teamsters, I expect.
Must be, but there's not enough of him left to prove anything except that he went through hell dying. The women and the youngsters with the wagons don't need to see this. If you'll bring me a shovel, I'll put him in the ground.
I'll help you. Wait here.
An hour later, they had scraped a big enough hole out of the hard, rocky ground and lowered the dead man into it, wrapped in a blanket Dunlap had brought back from the wagon train along with the shovel. When the grave was covered up, Dunlap stood at the foot of it and took his hat off.
Lord, I don't know this poor sinner's name, but if any fella deserved a nice, comfortable spot in your bunkhouse, I reckon it's him. Have mercy on him, and on the fellows who were with him that we may never find, and bring them all home to be with you. Amen.
When the kid didn't repeat that benediction, Dunlap glanced over at him.
You ain't a religious man?
Didn't say that, but I've done some things in my life. Well, let's just say I'm not sure the Lord wants anything to do with me anymore.
I'd bet this old head of mine you're wrong about that. I'll take the wagons around this spot. Won't have to go much out of our way.
They didn't find the bodies of the other teamsters, and by nightfall there had been no other signs of the Apaches. The kid wondered if they had staked out the corpse as a warning to the wagon train to turn back. If that had been the intention, it had failed. Dunlap was determined to push on, and the kid didn't blame him. According to the wagon master, by the time the sun went down again, they would be in Rain Crow Valley. The night passed without incident, and so did the next morning. After the midday stop, the wagons rolled again, heading north. All during the long afternoon, the hills seemed to recede in front of them, so the destination seemed as far away as it had been when they had started. Gradually, though, the kid could tell they were getting closer. The grass wasn't quite as sparse, and the ground had some slope to it as they climbed toward the pass. The oxen had to strain a little harder in their traces. As they started up the approach to the pass, the kid, Harwood, and Farnham rode together. Harwood pulled his Winchester from its saddle boot and worked the rifle's lever.
There's going to be an ambush. Right on the other side of the pass is the best place for it.
The kid and Farnham followed his example. Gripping their rifles tightly, they rode through the wide pass until the landscape before them dropped down into a broad, surprisingly green valley that was every bit as beautiful as Dunlap had promised. And there were no Apaches in sight. No shots rang out. Nothing threatened.
Welcome to Rain Crow Valley.
The three scouts spread out to search the area on the other side of the pass. According to the prearranged plan, Dunlap had stopped the wagons before they entered the pass, and the vehicles wouldn't proceed until he got the all clear from Harwood, Farnham, and the kid. As he rode along the bank of a small creek, the kid scared up a small herd of deer, but that was the only life he saw other than a few birds in the scrub pines. He rendezvoused with Harwood and Farnham at the mouth of the pass and reported the lack of any threat that he found.
Same here.
The valley appears to be empty. I'll let Horace know. If you two want to stay over here and look around a little more, that's fine.
I'm surprised nobody has settled this place before now.
Well, it's a long way from anywhere, and you got to travel through some pretty rugged country to get to it. You saw that for yourself the past few days. There's no railroad in here and ain't likely to ever be one. The soil's good enough for farming, and there's large enough graze for a small herd of cattle, but nobody's gonna get rich settling here. But if you're looking for a nice place to live where a fellow who's willing to work hard can get by, Rain Crow Valley fits the bill. How about you, Morgan? You looking to settle down?
Not hardly.
I reckon I knew that. You ain't the type to ever let grass grow under your feet, are you?
I might have been. One time.
I won't even ask you what happened to change things. Ain't none of my business. I'm glad you came with us this far. Even though it turned out we didn't need your gun after all.
They looked back to see the wagons emerging from the pass and starting the descent into the valley. The trail was an easy one. It was almost like the valley had been put here specifically for those emigrants. Dunlap and Harwood led the wagons to a broad, level field next to one of the streams. The settlers would need a place to camp for a while until they'd had a chance to explore the valley and decide where they wanted to build their cabins and ranch houses. Later on, the camp might even serve as the site of a small community that was likely to grow up to serve the needs of the settlers. When word got around, it was possible more immigrants might arrive in Rain Crow Valley. For now, though, the most important thing was getting situated for the night. Dunlap had the drivers pull the wagons into the usual circle, for defensive purposes and also to shelter the livestock. As the shadows of dusk began to gather, cooking fires sprang up. The trees that grew along the creek provided fuel. The kid unsaddled his dun and picketed the horse with the other saddle mounts. Although he had no intention of settling here, it might be a good idea to stay for a few days and allow the dun to rest. That would also give him a chance to make sure the immigrants were settling in all right. Dunlap caught the kid's eye and waved him over.
We're still going to post guards tonight. I figure those Apaches are back across the border by now. They stopped long enough to attack that freight wagon, but with the cavalry patrolling, they're going to want to get back to their stronghold in Mexico.
You're probably right. I agree that it's a good idea to stay alert, though.
Are you going to be here with us?
For a day or two. I don't know for sure yet when I'm riding out.
You know you're welcome to stay as long as you want. We're much obliged to you for your help.
I didn't do anything but ride along with you.
Maybe so. But it eased my mind some, knowing that we had a fella as handy with a gun as you are along with us.
The kid assured Dunlap that he'd be glad to take a turn standing guard again, then went in search of some supper. For some reason, his footsteps led him toward Jessica Ritter's wagon. He expected to find Harwood there, but didn't see the scout, nor was Jessica visible outside the wagon. The thought crossed the kid's mind that Jessica and Harwood might be inside the wagon. They were engaged to be married, after all. The kid stepped to the back of the wagon.
Everybody all right in there?
Jessica pushed aside one of the canvas flaps that hung over the vehicle's rear opening and looked out at him with an irritated expression on her face.
I dropped my blasted Dutch oven.
Are you all right? One of those things can break a toe.
I'm fine. It didn't land on my foot. But when I jumped back so it wouldn't, I banged my head on one of the iron ribs that hold up the canvas cover.
Where's Harwood?
Scott said he was going to scout around a little more before it gets dark.
That's probably a good idea. He's devoted to his job.
Yes. Very devoted.
Let me give you a hand with that oven.
For a second, Jessica looked like she was going to refuse, but then she nodded her head.
All right. Thanks.
The kid lowered the tailgate, stepped up on it, and climbed into the wagon. With the sun already down, it was pretty dim inside, under the arching canvas cover. He saw the Dutch oven and bent to pick it up. Jessica reached for it at the same time.
I said you could help. I didn't say you had to pick it up yourself.
Their hands brushed together and stopped short of the Dutch oven, with skin pressed to skin. The kid expected Jessica to pull her hand away, but she didn't.
I can get it.
Before he knew what was happening, she had pressed her mouth to his. The kid moved his hand to her shoulders and eased her away from him.
Damn you, Morgan. Why did you have to come riding along and get me all mixed up like this?
If you're mixed up, it's because of you, not me. You'd be better off thinking about your fiancé.
Stop it! I don't want to think about him. He's not thinking about me right now, I can promise you that. The only thing he's thinking about is finding some Apaches to kill.
Sounds to me like a good way of staying alive. I'm sorry if there's trouble between the two of you, but I'm sure as hell not the solution.
I'm not going to marry him. I decided that even before you came along, kid. I only agreed because I'd known him for so long. Since before my husband died. I guess I was scared to face things alone.
You'll have to work that out without my help.
He started to turn away. She clutched at him.
Kid, please.
Let go of her, you sumbitch!
From the wagon's tailgate, Scott Harwood flung himself toward them. He tackled the kid, knocked him away from Jessica. Both men crashed to the floor of the wagon. Harwood started throwing wild punches in the gloom.
Scott, stop it! Stop it!
The kid reached up to grab the front of Harwood's shirt. A sudden heave sent Harwood crashing into the wagon's sideboards. The kid rolled away from him and came up on a knee.
Blast it, settle down!
The kid held out a hand toward Harwood as if to ward off the scout's attack. Harwood scrambled up and launched himself at the kid again. They crashed together, but this time the tackle took both of them off the rear of the wagon. When they hit the ground, they broke apart. People had heard the shouting from Jessica's wagon and were hurrying toward it to see what was wrong. The kid wasn't one to run from a fight, but as he got to his feet, he backed off. It was a pointless struggle that shouldn't have happened in the first place.
You've got it all wrong, Harwood. There's nothing between Mrs. Ritter and me.
You're a damn liar! I saw the two of you together. You either attacked her, or you're trying to steal her away from me!
Scott, stop it! Mr. Morgan didn't do anything. It was me. All me!
What are you saying, Jess?
You hurt me. I'm sorry, Scott, but I can't marry you.
Harwood stared at Jessica uncomprehendingly for a long moment. Finally, a grim realization settled over his face.
I was right.
Harwood turned his head to look at the kid.
You did this.
And with that, he twisted his body and grabbed for the gun on his hip. Harwood's hand opened, releasing his gun as he toppled forward.
You can pouch that iron now, kid. I'm obliged to you for not killing him.
The kid slid his Colt back into leather as he looked down at Harwood. The scout was out cold. Milo Farnham came up and scooped Harwood's gun from the ground.
I'll hang on to this for a while, just to make sure everybody's cooled off.
That's a good idea, Milo.
Dunlap turned to face the crowd.
You folks go on about your business. All the excitement's over.
A grim-faced Jessica climbed down from the wagon and went over to kneel beside the unconscious Harwood. She put a hand on his head where Dunlap had hit him.
He'll be all right. I didn't wallop him that hard. Reckon he'll have a headache when he wakes up, but that's all.
No, that's not all. He'll have a broken heart, too.
Ain't nothing I can do about that, ma'am.
No, it's too late. There's nothing anybody can do.
The kid turned away and walked toward his horse, leaving Jessica kneeling beside Harwood. Dunlap and Farnham followed him.
Maybe it ain't none of my business, but if you want to tell me what just happened, kid, I'm listening.
And if I don't want to tell you?
Then I'd be obliged if you did anyway. I signed on to bring these folks out here. They're my responsibility.
Not anymore, they're not. They're here. This is Rain Crow Valley. You did your job.
I reckon you're right about that. But I still feel like I got a duty to look after them. There's been some talk about making me the mayor of these parts, if you want to call it that. There's no town yet, but maybe there will be one of these days.
And Scott's our friend. We want to know what happened to start this.
Fine. Mrs. Ritter decided she doesn't want to marry him anymore. He blamed me for that.
Why would he do that?
Because he saw her kissing me.
You say she was kissing you?
That's the way it was.
I suppose I can believe that. I ain't known Mrs. Ritter all that long, but she strikes me as a gal who usually does just about whatever she wants to.
You didn't do anything to put the idea in her head.
No, I didn't. And you can believe me or not. I don't really give a damn.
I reckon I believe you. But no matter who's to blame for it, this here's a mess, and we got to do something about it.
I intend to.
The kid picked up his saddle blanket and threw it over the dun's back.
Hold on there. What are you doing?
Getting ready to ride out.
Tonight?
I think that would be a good idea.
Oh, there ain't no need to do that. Just steer clear of Scott and Ms. Ritter. Maybe they'll work things out between them, and maybe they won't. But we'll give them a chance to.
This isn't that big a camp.
The kid lifted his saddle and placed it on the dun's back.
There's too much of a chance I'd run into one or the other of them. And if that happens, Harwood's liable to try gunning me again.
Oh, but you can't travel at night.
I don't see why not.
The kid fastened the saddle cinches.
This is a big valley. I can make camp on my own a few miles away, where there's no chance of more trouble with Harwood. He's going to be riding on in a day or two anyway. I'll find somewhere else, maybe lay up for a week or two to let my horse rest. What's north of this valley, anyway?
More mountains. Get over them, and there's a basin with some ranches and a little settlement called San Blanco.
That's where I'll head, then.
Dadgummit, at least let me round up some supplies for you. We got plenty of food. We can spare enough to get you to that town. Shoot, that's the least we can do for you.
The kid wasn't sure why everybody felt so grateful to him when he really hadn't done anything to help these pilgrims. But some extra provisions would make his journey easier, so he nodded.
All right. Thanks.
Come on, Milo, we'll get those supplies.
You can handle that. I'm gonna stay here just to make sure there's no more trouble.
There won't be.
You can't be sure about that. Depends on how soon Scott wakes up.
Suit yourself.
Scott ain't a bad hombre, you know.
I never said he was.
He's a pretty close-mouthed cuss most of the time. And he ain't what you'd call friendly to most folks. But he really cares about that woman, Mrs. Ritter.
I don't doubt it. Any problems they have are between them, though. I don't have anything to do with it.
I got a hunch you're right. I've seen the way she looks at you when she thinks nobody's watching. I didn't know her when her husband was over there in Arizona with Crook. But Scott's told me enough, I figure she was really devoted to him. Must have hit her mighty hard when he died. Scott said he figured she never wanted anything to do with another man after that. But he got it in his head he was going to see if she'd warm up to him anyway. Well, she did, after so long a time. But now maybe she figures she made a mistake.
I hope they work it out. I don't wish trouble on anybody.
That's sort of an odd way for a gunfighter to feel, ain't it?
Not when that gunfighter just wants to be left alone.
Dunlap walked up a moment later, carrying a canvas sack that bulged with food and supplies.
Ah, there you go, kid. With our thanks.
I'm the one who ought to be thanking you.
The kid took the sack and tied it to his saddle.
Good luck to you.
Same to you, kid.
Did you happen to see whether Harwood regained consciousness yet?
Yeah, he was sitting and talking with Ms. Ritter. I didn't disturb him, and nobody else is either.
Good. I hope it all works out. Enjoy your lives here in Rain Crow Valley.
He touched his fingers to the brim of his hat in a salute and turned the dun to ride out of the circle of wagons. Full night had fallen, but once the kid was away from the campfires and his eyes had adjusted, the millions of stars in the ebony sky overhead provided enough light for him to see where he was going. He followed the creek, figuring that would be the easiest route to the northern part of the valley where he intended to spend the night. It likely would take him a few days to get out of the valley and cross that mountain range Dunlap had mentioned. He and the dun would be worn out by the time they reached the basin on the other side. He was already looking forward to finding the settlement and taking it easy for a few days. A half moon rose in the east and scattered more silvery light across the valley. The creek's meandering course quickly took the kid out of sight of the wagon train camp, and when he looked back, he could no longer see the fires. He rode on until he thought he was 4 or 5 miles north of the camp. When he came upon a pine-dotted knoll overlooking the creek, he decided it would make a decent place to stop for the night. He rode up the slope and found that the top of the knoll was fairly level. It would do to spread his bedroll, and there was enough grass to keep the dun happy. The kid dismounted, unsaddled, and picketed the horse, then delved into the bag of supplies Dunlap had given him. He found some biscuits that felt fresh and a hunk of salt pork. Starting a fire and brewing some coffee seemed like too much trouble. He would make a cold camp for the night, then have coffee in the morning. He sat on a fallen pine to eat, washing down the food with water from his canteen. When he was finished with his meal, he piled up some pine boughs, spread his blankets on top of them, took off his boots, and stretched out with his gun belt coiled on the ground beside him. His head rested on his saddle. He rolled onto his side and closed his eyes to go to sleep. The kid quickly flung his bedroll aside and reached for the revolver lying next to him. With the Colt in his hand, he got to his feet and walked over to the edge of the knoll. His pulse hammered in his head as he stared to the south toward the wagon camp. The gunfire wasn't the only thing that alarmed him. As he looked in that direction, he saw an orange glow climbing into the sky, faint at first, then growing stronger with every passing second. Something was burning down there, and the flames were big enough to light up the heavens. Suddenly, a dark shape flung itself out of the shadows and lunged at him. The Apache never had a chance. He wasn't alone, though. The kid switched his aim to where the flash had come from and went down in a rolling dive. As he came up on one knee with the Colt leveled, he spotted a figure in the moonlight, trying to get around the dun. The kid whirled as he came up, but the Apache was too close. He crashed into the kid in a flying tackle, and both of them went down. The kid expected to feel the bite of cold steel at any second. He sank a knee in the Apache's groin. He quickly grabbed the Apache's wrist, clamping the fingers of his left hand around it to hold the knife off. With his right hand, he shoved the revolver's barrel under the man's chin. The man fell back, dead. The kid plucked the knife from his fingers and rolled away from the corpse. He had just fired the last round in the Colt's cylinder. Extra cartridges were in his pocket, but the knife would have to do until he could reload. As he knelt there, with the empty gun in one hand and the knife in the other, listening to the pounding beat of his pulse inside his head, he looked around the clearing where he'd made his camp and didn't see anyone else. The kid's instincts told him that his enemies were dead. He trusted those instincts, but he wanted confirmation. He stood up, slipped the knife behind his belt, and reached into his pocket for those extra shells. It took only a moment to thumb them into the cylinder. With the gun ready, he checked the three bodies. The Apaches were all dead, just as he'd suspected. With that grim chore out of the way, he quickly holstered the Colt, strapped the gun belt around his hips, and pulled on his boots. He got the saddle on the dun as fast as he could. He hadn't forgotten the sounds of battle he had heard coming from the south, or the glow of flames lighting up the sky.
Bastards. The cruel bastards.
The Apaches must have been watching the wagon train for the past couple of days, he thought. They were probably curious and wanted to see where the immigrants were going. Once it was obvious they planned to settle in Rain Crow Valley, the Apaches had moved in to snatch away their chance for happiness, and most likely their lives as well. The raiders had been lurking out there in the darkness, watching the camp, and they had seen the kid ride away. They had sent 3 men after him, no doubt thinking that that was plenty to slaughter one lone white man. Those 3 had found out just how wrong that was. The kid couldn't take any pleasure in that. As soon as everything was ready, he put his foot in the stirrup and swung up into the saddle. Leaving the dead warriors where they had fallen, he rode down the hill to the creek and started south. He pushed the gun as fast as he dared through the darkness. From time to time, he stopped to listen. When he didn't hear any more shots, a feeling of rage filled him. Fate had conspired to keep him away from the settlers on the very night they could have most used his help. The orange glare in the sky brightened, then began to fade. The fires were dying down, the kid knew. It was just like the attack on the Conestoga, only on a much larger scale. He dreaded the sight of the devastation that awaited him. But not for a second did he consider turning back. He had ridden out of that village several days earlier when violence was about to erupt, and that decision had nagged at him. The circumstances tonight were much different. He hadn't had any idea the Apaches were about to attack the camp. He wasn't going to turn away again. He slowed down as he approached the camp. Fires still burned here and there, but most of the wagons had already been consumed. Bodies, human and animal alike, littered the ground thickly. All the oxen had been slaughtered, but as far as the kid could tell, the Apaches had taken some of the horses with them. They could trade those horses below the border, maybe, or kill them and eat them on the way back to Mexico. He dismounted and started through the camp on foot, searching for survivors. Horace Dunlap's body lay just inside the circle of charred wagons. The wagon master still clutched a gun in his hand. He had been shot to pieces, riddled with at least a dozen bullets. The kid would have been willing to bet that Dunlap had taken some of the attackers with him, though. He moved on, listening for a moan, peering through the flickering light of the flames that still burned for any sign of movement. He didn't find any. After a few moments, he came to Jessica's wagon. At least, he thought it was her wagon. In the midst of all this destruction, it was difficult to be sure. He saw a familiar figure lying face down next to the burned wagon. The kid hurried over and knelt next to the man, grasping his shoulder and rolling him onto his side. Scott Harwood's head hung limply on his neck. His face was twisted in death. The broken shaft of an arrow protruded from his chest. The kid could tell what had happened. That arrow had driven deeply into Harwood's body, killing him, and the shaft had broken off when the scout pitched forward. Still on one knee, the kid looked around, thinking that Jessica's body had to be nearby. He figured she would have died fighting, just as many of the others obviously had. He didn't see her, though. He kept looking. The kid swung around to see where the noises had come from.
Who's there? Can you hear me?
Over here.
The kid ran toward one of the sprawled shapes and dropped to a knee beside it. The wounded man lay on his side. Easing him over onto his back, the kid propped the man's head up. Milo Farnham's shirt front was dark and sodden with blood.
Kid, is that you?
That's right, Milo. Take it easy. I'll see if I can help you.
Ain't no chance of that. Gut shot. I've been trying to hang on because I thought maybe he'd hear the fighting and come back.
I'll go get my canteen.
No. Water won't help. I wanted to tell you. Those red bastards didn't...
What didn't they do, Milo?
They didn't kill everybody.
They took prisoners with them?
Yeah. I seen them. They had Jess Ritter and Miss Price and her daughter and another lady, Leah Gabbard. I saw them drag those gals off. I thought maybe you'd come back. I could tell you. They headed south. You gotta go after.
I'll go after them, Milo. You did the right thing by hanging on until I got here. I'll go after them and do everything I can for them.
A short while later, the kid rode to the edge of the hills and stopped. Since the Apaches had prisoners now, not to mention those horses they had taken from the camp, it was likely they would head for the border in a straight line, just as fast as they could. But the kid couldn't be absolutely certain of that, so the smart thing to do would be to wait until morning and pick up their trail once it was light. A war party of 100 men couldn't travel without leaving behind plenty of signs, even in the arid wasteland. When he thought about Jessica Ritter and the other three women, he wanted to keep going, but he forced himself to stop and unsaddle the dun. If he was going to have any chance of rescuing the captives, he had to keep his emotions at bay. He had to be as coldly calculating as a machine. It was the only way to overcome the overwhelming odds he faced. The kid picketed his horse and spread his bedroll again for the second time that night. He wrapped up in his blankets against the nighttime chill and tried to sleep. But even though his eyes were closed, he kept seeing horrific images of fire and blood and death. He hadn't witnessed the slaughter at the wagon camp, but in his mind, it was like he had been there, watching and hearing everything. Every terrible thing. Despite that, weariness eventually claimed him, but his sleep was restless and haunted by nightmares. He was glad when he woke up the next morning in the cold gray light of dawn. The kid stood up and stretched to ease muscles that ached from tossing and turning so much on the hard ground. He gathered broken branches from some nearby scrub brush and built a small fire. He soon had coffee boiling and shaved slices off a chunk of salt pork into his frying pan. There were plenty of biscuits left in the bag of provisions Horace Dunlap had gathered for him the night before, as he hunkered on his heels next to the fire and ate. The kid thought about the people who had donated that food to him. Most of them, maybe all of them, were dead. The meal tasted like ashes in his mouth, but he forced himself to eat anyway. By the time the sky was light enough for him to start searching for the war party's tracks, he had his gear packed away and the dun saddled. He mounted and began to ride along the edge of the hills. He had gone less than a quarter mile when he came to a broad swath of hoof prints and moccasin tracks that led off to the south. Some of the Apaches were on foot, but that wasn't surprising. The kid turned to follow the tracks. Figuring out how many men were in the war party was impossible. The prints were too jumbled up. The only thing he could be sure of was that there were a lot of them. From the looks of it, the Apaches weren't trying to cover their trail. They knew they had avoided the cavalry patrol, which had moved on west. And they wouldn't be expecting any pursuit from the devastated wagon camp. As far as they knew, they hadn't left anyone alive behind them. After a few days, when the three Apaches who had gone after the kid failed to return, the rest might start to wonder what had happened to them. They wouldn't be too concerned, though. The kid was only one man. The night's chill disappeared rapidly as the sun climbed into the sky. As the heat grew, the kid wondered how far it was to the next source of water. He had filled both of his canteens in the creek in Rain Crow Valley before he rode away, but in the semi-desert, that water wouldn't last long. The dun would require quite a bit of it. A couple of hours after sunup, he spotted dust rising to the west. Unless the war party had made a sharp turn for some unfathomable reason, that was the wrong direction for them. The kid reined in and rested his hands on the saddle horn as he studied the dust. It wasn't the first such cloud he had seen recently. In that arid country, any group larger than a few riders raised considerable dust. The cloud was about the same size as the one he had seen a few days earlier as the cavalry patrol approached the wagon train. The kid decided the smart thing to do was wait and see. The delay in going after the Apaches grated on him, but he needed to know whether or not he had a new threat galloping toward him. He looked around, spotted a cluster of boulders about half a mile away, and rode toward it, figuring the rocks would conceal him while he got a good look at those riders. Once he was behind the boulders, he dismounted and pulled his Winchester from its saddle sheath. He found a good spot where he could see the approaching dust cloud and waited. Within a few minutes, he could make out the riders. He thought he saw the bright colors of a flapping guidon, so he fetched his telescope from the saddlebags to check.
Yep, it's them. Much too late to do any good, though.
He closed the telescope, put it away, and stepped out from behind the boulders. He pointed the Winchester into the sky. The troopers turned toward him without stopping. The kid lowered the Winchester and waited until the blue-uniformed soldiers rode up and reined in. Lieutenant Nicholson was in the lead, with Sergeant Brennan behind him.
Morgan! What are you doing out here?
I'm trailing that Apache war party. What are you doing?
Not that I have to answer to you, but we're returning to Fort Bliss. We've reached the limits of the area we were supposed to patrol.
Let me guess. You didn't see any sign of the Apaches, did you?
As a matter of fact, no. What's that you said about trailing them?
You didn't see them because they didn't want you to see them. They probably knew where you were every minute of the day and night and could have ambushed you at any time. The only reason you're not dead now is because they found a more tempting target. That wagon train.
The wagon train?
That's right. Except for 4 women the Apaches carried off as prisoners, every man, woman, and child in that party of immigrants is dead now. And I figure you're partially to blame for that.
Hold on just a damn minute. You best keep a respectful tongue in your head when you're talking to the lieutenant, mister.
I'm not in the army. Those gold bars don't mean anything to me. If you'd stayed with the wagons, the Apaches might not have attacked.
You can't be certain of that.
The lieutenant dismounted and handed his reins to Brennan. He turned to the kid.
Tell me what happened.
The kid summed up the bloody, tragic circumstances in as few words as possible. Nicholson's face had acquired a tan during his service in the Southwest, but he turned pale underneath it as the kid described how everyone with the wagon train had been killed, except for the 4 women who were taken prisoner.
You say you were trailing the Apaches?
That's right. Their tracks are hard to miss. You might have even noticed them if you'd kept riding.
We saw the glow in the sky from our camp last night. The sergeant told me something was on fire, and I was planning to investigate. I recalled that man Dunlap saying the wagon train was headed for Rain Crow Valley, and I wanted to be sure the settlers were all right.
Little late for that.
By God, I've had just about enough of you, mister.
Stand down, sergeant. Civilians are entitled to their opinion, even when they don't know what they're talking about. I had my orders, Mr. Morgan, and I followed them. My conscience is clear.
If you want to follow something, how about following their tracks? The Apaches probably aren't expecting any pursuit. We might be able to catch up to them in time to do those women some good.
Nicholson frowned in thought as he considered the suggestion.
For God's sake, your orders are to find that war party, right?
To locate and engage the hostiles, yes.
Well, those tracks will lead you right to them. Even a stiff-necked son of a... Even you ought to be able to see that, Lieutenant.
You're right. Following those tracks is exactly what I should be doing, Mr. Morgan. And you're going to help me do it.
What are you talking about?
From this point on, consider yourself under my command. You are now attached to this patrol as a civilian scout, and therefore under the jurisdiction of the United States Army.
The hell you say?
That's right, the hell I say. I'm declaring this part of the territory to be under martial law, and as such I have the right to impress civilians into temporary duty.
That can't be legal.
If you think so, you can take up the matter with my superior officers when we get back to Fort Bliss. In the meantime, you already said you were trailing those Apaches. I intend to do the same thing. Why should you object to riding with us?
It's not the riding with you I object to. It's the blasted business about being under your command.
Well, perhaps it won't come to that. We want the same thing, after all, don't we? To punish those savages and deliver justice to them for their crimes.
That wasn't what the kid wanted at all. He wanted to rescue Jessica and the other 3 women. Killing some Apaches in the process would be a good thing, but it wasn't the main objective. If he said that, it would just lead to more arguing with Nicholson, and they had already wasted enough time.
Let me get my horse. I'll ride with you.
I thought so.
The kid led the patrol to the tracks and pointed out how they arrowed straight south.
They're making a run for the border. The Apaches may not be expecting any pursuit, but they want to get below the line before anybody can catch up to them, just in case.
The savages took 4 women as prisoners, you said?
That's right. Mrs. Jessica Ritter, Mrs. Violet Price, Mrs. Price's daughter, Elsie, I think her name is, and a woman named Gabbard. I don't know if she was married or not. If she was, she's a widow now.
That's regrettable. I hope circumstances allow us to be of assistance to them.
The kid knew what that meant. Nicholson would be perfectly willing to sacrifice the prisoners' lives if doing so helped him destroy the war party. The odds of that happening were pretty slim, the kid thought. The patrol was outnumbered 3-1 and was outgunned to boot. The best they could hope for would be to hit the Apaches hard, inflict some casualties, then get away without being wiped out themselves. But in doing so, they might provide enough of a distraction for the kid to rescue the captives. That was what he hoped for. The patrol headed south, following the tracks. Nicholson didn't really need the services of a scout. The trail was so easy to see, even a greenhorn like him could follow it. If Frank Morgan had been there, he could have examined the tracks and the droppings left behind by the Apache ponies and figured out how far ahead the war party was. The kid wasn't that skilled as a tracker, although the past couple of years had given him some experience in that area.
How far is it to the border?
I don't know. Around 50 miles, I'd say, but that's just a guess.
How will we know when we get there? There's no river separating the counties here in New Mexico Territory like there is over in Texas.
Don't know that either. There are a few settlements right along the border, I think. We may have to find one of them and ask folks where the line is.
I can't pursue the hostiles into Mexico. You know that, don't you? If I were to cross the border, it might provoke an international incident.
We'll worry about the border when we get there. Right now, let's just keep moving as fast as we can without running these horses into the ground.
The kid managed not to laugh. Out in the middle of nowhere, it was unlikely anybody would know or care if Nicholson and his troops crossed the border. The Mexican government might make a stink about it later on, but it would be too late to do anything other than complain. They could avoid the issue entirely by catching up to the war party and dealing with it sooner rather than later. Every hour those women were in the hands of the Apaches was another hour when something bad could happen. The kid was under no illusion about how the prisoners were being treated. Probably all four of them had been raped already. Even if they survived the ordeal and escaped from captivity, their lives had been changed forever. A lot of so-called good Christian folks wouldn't have anything to do with a woman who had lain with a savage, even against her will. That attitude didn't make any sense to the kid, but he knew it was true. If there was anybody strong-willed enough to rebuild her life after such a thing, it was Jess Ritter. All the women deserved that chance, not just Jess. As they rode, the kid constantly scanned the horizon ahead of them, looking for the dust raised by the Apaches, and also watching for places where there might be an ambush. The raiders could have left some warriors behind in case anyone gave chase. Even a relatively small group of Apaches could deal out quite a bit of damage if they took the cavalrymen by surprise. Nicholson called frequent halts to rest the horses. The kid didn't like the delays, but he knew it was the right thing to do. On the frontier, a man's mount had to be protected at all costs. It was often the only thing standing between that man and a lingering, miserable death from thirst or starvation. During one of those stops, the kid was giving the Dunn some water from his hat when Sergeant Brennan came up to him, trailed by a couple of troopers. The kid glanced at Brennan and saw the belligerent look on the non-com's face. That trouble the kid expected had shown up sooner than he anticipated.
You're mighty quick to talk about how the lieutenant didn't stay with those pilgrims, Morgan. Where were you when those Apaches attacked?
Like I told Lieutenant Nicholson, I was camped a few miles up the valley.
How come? You traveled with them for several days. How come as soon as they got where they were going, you up and left them?
That's none of your business.
I reckon it is. You can't go around accusing the lieutenant of abandoning those settlers when you did the same damn thing. Actually, what you did was worse to my way of thinking. The lieutenant had orders to follow. You just flat left him for the Apaches to slaughter.
You don't know what you're talking about, Sergeant. I had my reasons for what I did, and again, they're none of your business.
What were you doing, Morgan? Messing around with some poor sod buster's wife?
Back off.
That's it, ain't it? You didn't leave. They ran you off. You're just a no-account gunman who can't keep his hands off other men's women.
Brennan, I'm warning you.
What are you gonna do, gunfighter? Shoot me? The lieutenant and the rest of the boys will hang you if you do. It'll be pure murder if you drew on me. I'm not even carrying a gun.
With a grimace of disgust, the kid turned away. Brennan's hand shot out and grabbed the kid's arm.
Don't turn your back on me, you know.
The kid twisted around and hooked his right fist into Brennan's midsection. The two troopers who had walked over with Brennan were quick to react. The kid avoided one man's charge, but the second man caught him with a looping punch that raised his jaw. The impact was enough to make him take a step back. Before the trooper could go for a second blow, the kid snapped a left jab into the man's face. The kid swung a right that slammed into the man's jaw, knocking him out cold. The first trooper recovered his balance and ran at him. When the kid ducked his attacker's punch, he pivoted and threw a hard right to the attacker's temple. The trooper fell, but wasn't out yet. Brennan had recovered and stepped in, aiming a punch at the kid's face. The kid ducked under the blow and threw an uppercut at Brennan's chin. Brennan's eyes rolled up into their sockets and he collapsed to the dirt.
Attention! Attention, dammit! That's enough!
Nicholson strode up to him and glared.
You're under arrest, Morgan. I won't have brawling among my men.
You can't arrest me. I'm not a damned soldier.
I told you this area is now under martial law because the threat of the Apaches. Now give me your gun.
If you're going to arrest anybody, it ought to be them. They started it.
That's a lie, Lieutenant. Morgan threw the first punch. I saw it.
I didn't do anything until Brennan grabbed me.
When we get back to Fort Bliss, the commanding officer will hear your testimony and decide whether to seek civil charges against you. Until then, I'll take your gun, Morgan.
The kid glanced around. There were close to 30 troopers, and while none of them held a rifle at the moment, their Springfields were close by. Those weren't good odds. And anyway, he didn't want to shoot American soldiers. Well, maybe one, he thought, as he looked at Nicholson.
It wouldn't be smart to take my gun when we're on the trail of 100 bloodthirsty Apaches, Lieutenant.
If we encounter the hostiles, I'll return your weapon.
How about if I give you my parole? That's what you Army types call it, isn't it? I swear not to use my gun against you, and you don't push this until it's gone too far for either of us to back out. Deal?
Nicholson hesitated. He didn't want to back down in front of his men. Yet the arrangement the kid had proposed did have some precedent.
All right. You give me your parole now, and we'll deal with your actions once we get back to Fort Bliss. That's acceptable.
The kid returned the nod, even though he had no intention of ever going to Fort Bliss with the stuffed shirt lieutenant. Nicholson jerked a hand toward Brennan, who was still unconscious.
Get the sergeant up and throw a little water in his face. Not much, though. We can't afford to waste it. We'll ride in 5 minutes.
He watched as several soldiers roused Brennan from his stupor. When the sergeant had his wits about him again, he looked over at the kid with a glare of pure hatred.
This ain't over.
I know.